The work of American playwright Tennessee Williams is known for its poetry, the thick vein of autobiographical truth that runs through much of it, and its many adaptations to film, including A Streetcar Named Desire, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and The Night of the Iguana. Despite the near-brutal emotional vulnerability wielded in his most famous works, Williams himself tended to exaggerate and prevaricate when it came to interviews. His autobiography, Memoirs, is riddled with inaccuracies, half-truths, and downright lies. But his work lives on, and the reason people are still producing Williams after all these years is that he wrote with honesty about the complexities of the human heart, relationships between lovers and among family members. He was born in Mississippi in 1911 as Thomas Williams. It wasn't until he was 28 and had moved to New Orleans that he christened himself Tennessee and began the most creative period of his life. He was a prolific writer who did not limit himself to one area. He wrote poetry, he wrote short stories, he wrote plays, he wrote screenplays. His first Broadway success came in 1945 with the production of The Glass Menagerie. Just 2 years later, A Streetcar Named Desire opened to even bigger applause and won him not just a New York Drama Critics Circle Award, but also his first Pulitzer. By 1959, he had 2 Pulitzer Prizes, a Tony, 3 Circle Awards, and a number of other recognitions. The 1960s were not as kind. After a series of flops, Williams retreated further into drug and alcohol abuse. He died in a New York City hotel room in 1983. For KMUW, this is Sandamore Coleman.
And we welcome you on stage. I'm Fletcher Powell here, of course, with Sandamore Coleman. Hi, Sanda.
Hi, Fletcher.
And we've been talking a lot about comedy, not anymore.
No, today we're taking a short excursion into poetry. Usually when people talk about poetry on stage, poetry and drama, if they're not talking about Shakespeare, there's a good chance that they're talking about Tennessee Williams. And the reason for that is that his better works, strove to use symbology and metaphor and lyricism. His career was made with The Glass Menagerie, and it is a good example of his delicate handling of those aspects to it. The dark side of this, he was a prolific writer. I mean, he got up every day, he wrote, he swam, and then he drank.
As all prolific writers.
Right. Well, he has said himself that what really ruined him was success. He said he was very unhappy after The Glass Menagerie was met with such success. And I think in part because success was not good for him. It allowed him to feed excesses in himself. I think he was sort of self-medicating, and he had the means to do it. And you saw that reflected in the quality of work. He said that The Glass Menagerie, which was based on a short story he wrote called Portrait of a Girl in Glass, he has spent the most time on that. And you can really tell because it is so delicately structured and so spare and so lovely. On an interesting side note, in the original script, he uses screens to indicate impactful moments. I have never seen it produced that way, not once. So I don't know if people just decided unilaterally that forget the screens, or I don't know what happened, but I myself have never seen it staged as it was originally written. The problem with symbology and lyricism in language is that it has a flip side, and that is melodrama and cliches. And in his better work, he managed to avoid that. As his career progressed and his illness progressed, the quality of his work could tend to the other side, the dark side of lyricism. However, One of the other aspects of the Glass Menagerie that is interesting, he called it a memory play. And everyone sort of knows his basic story. He did grow up with a sister who had an illness. Mental illness ran in his family and his mother's side of the family. His mother was this overbearing Southern belle. He did sort of run away from home as an adult to join the Merchant Marine. But I would argue that in all of his better plays, there are biographical moments. He has himself said that he most identifies with Blanche DuBois in A Streetcar Named Desire. And by that, I think he meant that he had always felt vulnerable and helpless on an emotional level, and so depended upon the kindness of strangers. However, the deeper into his illness that he ventured, I mean, and as I said, the self-medicating, the drugs and the alcohol, at a certain point that turns from being a way to cope to a reason you're struggling harder. But because of this condition, it led him to, and hand in hand with his success, he developed a paranoia about and an artistic ego about his work. And whereas before he was a very collaborative writer, the older he got, the less willing he was to admit criticism from people. And his longstanding relationship with his agent, Audrey Woods, gone just overnight, practically. And his explanation of it differed wildly from hers, although she was very circumspect about the situation. When he talked about things that happened to him, it was always someone else's fault. And yes, we are, as we've discussed before, we are all the heroes of our own stories. But the autobiography that he put out was so far from the truth that I think it was more of a wishful tale than a true one. And I think that you will find more truth in those early plays. When he was asked what writer influenced him the most, he said Chekhov for everything. Chekhov, 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 he said. As far as drama, short story, prose, Chekhov was his man. And it's interesting to me because you can see that that would appeal to him as a person, because as a person, he evidently was a very buttoned-down type. And, of course, Chekhov is all about the undercurrents. So I can see why he identified so closely with that writer. But his works themselves are so, his plays, Williams's plays, are very different than what you find in Chekhov. They have some similarities, but if you put them side by side, you would not say, oh, yes, I can see the huge influence that Chekhov had here. I think Chekhov had more an influence on him as a person, perhaps, than as a writer. But that's my opinion. In The Night of the Iguana, what I saw in that play was the Reverend Shannon, who is Williams's representative in this play, struggles with depression. He struggles with anxiety. And his flip side, his counterpart, Hannah Jelks, also suffers from these problems, but she has a great deal of self-control, and she has managed through self-discipline and meditation to overcome these problems. And I think that she was sort of an idealized picture of what he wished he could be. and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, I think it's really hard to nail down who is his character, the character based on him. I would say he's a little bit Maggie and he's a little bit Brick. And I think that he did that a lot. I think he dispersed his issues among a variety of characters. And, you know, as all writers do, we write from our lives. And his life was full of conflict. In 1994, John Lahr, who is the son of Bert Lahr, who we know as the Cowardly Lion, he was the recently appointed drama critic for The New Yorker. And he received a call from Lyle Leverich, who was a former theater producer and had been chosen by Williams as his biographer. And Mr. Leverich had at least two letters that swore to this fact. But the literary guardian of Williams' estate was Maria St. Just, and she refused to grant permission to quote from any of his journals or letters. And so Mr. Leverich contacted Mr. Lahr and said, "Can you help me?" And Mr. Lahr started digging around. And the next thing you know, he managed to turn up a lot of information. And after she died, the estate was somewhat embarrassed by the lengths to which she went to preserve these things. And so they just opened everything up. And Mr. Lahr had, in the meantime, been named the custodian of Leverich's files. Mr. Leverich died in 1999, and Mr. Lahr took over. So it's a two-volume account. The first volume that Mr. Leverich wrote took the biography up to the point of the success of The Glass Menagerie, and it stopped there. And I read that book, and it was fascinating. It was really well done. I have not read Mr. Lahr's book, which picks up where the first one left off and goes on to Williams's death. I know that in his later years, he did a lot of talk shows. He was frequently not sober. Mr. Lahr met him only once, and that was, I think, at a revival, maybe, of Camino Real. And he said that Mr. Williams had to be assisted to walk. He was unable to do that. So, I mean, it's a very sad story of a man whose talent rivaled his illness. And it was a lifelong struggle, and we got several beautiful plays out of it. And I hope he found some relief from it. Into the 60s, the critics just destroyed him. And at one point, one critic suggested that Mr. Williams should purchase a one-way ticket to Three Mile Island. I mean, they were just unbelievably harsh to him. And for a man who considered himself Blanche DuBois, it must have been devastating. But the interesting thing is that he was coming back around. Mr. Lahr says that there were plays of his, later plays, toward the end of his career, toward the end of his life, that were solid, that were, if not great, at least good works. And that's kind of nice, I think, because otherwise we're left with this supernova, this flash of light, and then gone. So it's nice to know that there are plays out there still that we have yet to appreciate by Mr. Williams. And in the meantime, we have several that we can appreciate now.
Well, that'll do it for On Stage this week. Thanks, Sanda, as always.
Thank you. Let's try to be fun next time.
And for KMUW, I'm Fletcher Powell.